Hi, everybody. It's Brian, host of the Work in Sports podcast. Before I get into today's episode with Brian Srabian, VP of Digital Media and Brand Development with the San Francisco Giants, I want to say thank you to our sponsors, Temple University, right down the road from me in Philadelphia. At Temple, they know the world of sports is full of exciting careers, from operations and management to sales and promotions. Temple University's School of Sport, Tourism, and Hospitality Management integrates real-world experience into a dynamic curriculum taught by industry professionals, which is so important, learning from true practitioners. Learn how you can earn your master's degree in sports business in 2 years or less. Visit sthm.temple.edu/sports to get started. One more time, sthm.temple.edu/sports. Check out Temple. Great program, people. And also, the Work in Sports podcast is brought to you by workinsports.com. We are the number one job board in the sports industry and have the most in-depth career-focused content. Right now, I was just checking this morning, we have over 10,047 active sports jobs on our site. Plus, we have over 160 podcast episodes providing you actionable advice for your sports career and another 500 articles focused also on your sports career. Not only that, but when you upload your resume to workinsports.com, we do all the work for you. We scan our 10,000 plus jobs and find you the best matches for your skill set. Pretty cool, right? Also, we love the NCAA tournament in our office. So for a limited time, we're running our Job Madness promo. Visit workinsports.com/promo/jobmadness and sign up for a membership for just $5. That's right. You get 2 weeks of full access for just $5. That is workinsports.com/promo/jobmadness. A membership to workinsports.com will get your sports career rolling because we believe everyone should have a job they love. Now, let's start the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Clapp, Director of Content for workinsports.com. And this is the Work in Sports podcast. Over the last decade or so, there's been a greater emphasis on culture and environment in the workplace, especially in business, but more recently in sports. Not to get all, when I was a young whippersnapper on you, but when I started my sports career back in 1996, everything was task-oriented. Get the job done, period. My boss didn't really care about my feelings or how I fit in, whether I felt comfortable taking chances in my role, and I didn't really expect her to. Not to say she wasn't a great boss, she was, but that just wasn't our focus. If you messed up, that was bad. If you messed up multiple times, you'd be labeled as unreliable and never given the fun games to cover or the next opportunity. That was sports, and that was the media. We couldn't really afford to take a lot of risks and be wrong, because then you lose credibility. Failure then was not seen as a pathway to creativity. It was seen as a pathway to a different career. Around the early 2000s, my wife, then girlfriend, was in the dot-com industry where they played ping pong in the office and totally changed the concept of failure. This new wave of thought believed failure was a necessary part of true growth and creativity. This idea of failing being acceptable always kind of confused me. I guess I was more of a black and white kind of person, right and wrong. She played Half-Life around her office, and I sprinted around the newsroom trying to get a story on the air and not miss deadline. We live very different work worlds. But despite 90% of the dot-coms going out of business, they may have been onto something. The sports world has come this direction as well. There's more concern than ever for happiness, inclusion, cultural fits, and more. In fact, the same concept the dot-com industry embraced in the early 2000s, of failure being a necessary indicator of pushing yourself to new limits, finds its way into the sports world modus operandi too. As we constantly try to push new boundaries in social media, content creation, branding, advertising, and marketing, we can't just recycle old ideas. We need to push new boundaries. We need to try new things. We need to be free to fail in the spirit of refining and developing. It's not the same as saying, do crappy work and it will be all okay. It's the concept that to be unique means you have to try things out of your comfort zone sometimes and you won't always hit the mark, but you have to feel okay trying. I heard someone say the other day, if you want to see something new, you better go to a different planet, implying everything's been done before. I don't buy this. I see new often. I see teams and brands and leagues pushing past normalcy daily. And I see failure. I think back if these things and wonder if these things are inextricably linked. Was I afraid to fail in my early career and therefore less impactful, never really tapping into the full me? And now do I feel more emboldened to fail and am therefore more creative? Hell if I know. But one thing I know about myself is I do like an environment where I'm not self-censoring every move, fearful it will result in my downfall. I do like running a group of people and trying to get them to work fearlessly, not carelessly. We still have to be accurate. We still have to do things the right way and be careful what we say and who we say it about. But the idea of trying without fear makes a lot of sense to me. And that's the philosophy of today's guest. I believe wholeheartedly that for a creative person, you could have no better leader and role model than Brian Sarabian, San Francisco Giants VP of Digital Media and Brand Development. For 18 years, he's been a fixture with the Giants. And get this, he started his career well before the internet really existed in full, well before social media. And now, in my view, he is the kingpin, the OG of the sports social media. He adapted to a changing world, became an expert in a growing field, pushed the Giants to new levels, and formulated a highly functioning team that isn't afraid to fail. And because of that, they've succeeded an awful lot. But I'll let him tell it. Here's Brian Sarabian, San Francisco Giants VP of Digital Media and Brand Development. Hey, Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Brian. Thanks for having me. And I know we've traded emails for a while, so it's great to finally connect with you.
Yeah, this is great. I'm so excited to have you on the show because in my view and in my estimation, you're one of the front runners or one of the almost like founding fathers of social media and sports. So this is a great conversation to get into. Before we get into all that, all the fun stuff, I want to go back to your beginning a little bit. You started out with the Giants back in 1996, so I graduated right at the same time, so I think we got our sports careers launched at similar points, but you started out in corporate sponsorship. That's a long way from being the guy behind the Giants social media success story. How did you eventually, on a personal level, find your fit in the sports industry?
So what you're saying is, how did the guy start his career pre-internet era into running social media? So that's kind of, you're dating me a little bit.
It's pretty cool.
And then calling me a founding father. I don't know if that's...
You're on the Mount Rushmore. How about that?
Way too kind. I guess that's just when you work for that long, they end up coming up with names like that. So, you know, it's funny. It is interesting. And I joke, but 1996, I'm guessing none of your listeners were even alive back then, but it was
just you and me,
straight
buddy.
Out of college. Yeah, you and I, and then, but I was straight out of college. The internet was just getting started. I didn't have the wherewithal to work for a startup or any of the internet companies in and around San Francisco, but I actually had an internship in 95, my senior year, and that turned into an opportunity for me to get an entry-level job working in corporate sponsorship with the Giants. And at that time, the Giants were just announced that they were going to build a new stadium in 2000. So there was a lot of opportunity and promise. I was just happy to have a job and right. work for the Giants. And I thought maybe that would be a cool conversation starter later on. And, you know, the team I grew up rooting for, it would be really cool. But never did I think I would, you know, make a career out of it or have any indication of what the future held in sports. And it's funny that you talk about social media and, you know, where we are now, but that ballpark was built in 2000, the height of the internet boom, the first one anyway. Yep. And that ballpark was built with kind of the impetus that fans wanted to kind of get away from technology. That was a time, you could think back then, I mean, it was pre-iPhone, but email and websites and AOL Messenger was kind of the rage, but people kind of said, hey, we want to go and enjoy a game without, you know, worried about technology. And so the ballpark kind of had that nostalgia feel inspired by kind of Camden Yards and Wrigley And there was some, you know, interesting engagements and activations around the ballpark, but no one wanted to engage with fans, you know, digitally at that time, or digital with teams, because it was kind of that era of still getting to know things. But I enjoyed what I did. I learned a lot about, you know, what the sponsorship of a sports team was, how to kind of make that work with a fan base that was, you know, highly engaged with their product, that being the baseball team, but not so much with what the sponsor was, and trying to kind of bridge that gap. And sometimes you get a little creative, sometimes it's a natural fit. But just understanding kind of that part of the business. I even dabbled a little bit in sales, failed miserably. I had a fear of talking to strangers on the phone and asking them for things.
So, I do too.
I tried to kind of just learn as much as I could about kind of how the inner organization worked, and learned about, you know, that sponsorship was something that was really interesting. You didn't really, you know what, you didn't hear about it. It wasn't really what it is now, where they printed things. And I remember that the 3Com Park was a big deal, and they renamed Candlestick, but Pacific Bell Park, I think the reported deal was 20 years naming rights for $25 million total. Yeah. And so, you know, being just in and around some of the people that helped make that, it was a really interesting experience for me. But the marketing of the Giants, the marketing in sports, that was what really, you know, got me excited. And every day I was more excited just to learn on the job.
So you were with the Giants. You had two different stints in a way. So your first couple years, you did the corporate sponsorship thing. You were in game entertainment and marketing. You kind of pivoted that direction. And then you changed. This happens. People go to different organizations or different roles. And then you came back to the Giants, and you were more in the digital social side as that was developing around 2010. How much did that earlier experience in the game entertainment and the marketing kind of influence that second run in digital and social? Did that help out with the brand development, all the things you were working on as you came back to the Giants in 2010?
You know, it's when I have discussions with people about this and about their jobs and careers, and I feel like I'm on the other side of it now, where I'm, you know, reflecting back. You just never know where your career path is going. You don't know. It's like I have these discussions with my kids, you know, why do we have to learn about adverbs and math? And I'm like, because you just don't know where it's going to lead. And I had to learn about adverbs as well as I was teaching my son. So I pulled up Schoolhouse Rock on YouTube. But anyway, it's funny because the social media, all the entertainment, the sponsorship activations, a lot of that really was grooming me for what, at least for me, what I felt social media could be for a team and could really connect with fans. You know, we were so used to communicating, you know, via email or just these mass marketing messages, buy tickets here and Giants win and Giants sign so-and-so player, that social media, you know, developed a voice. There was a human element to it. Fans were looking to be entertained, and we took some of those elements and fundamentals that we learned when you're entertaining fans at a sporting event, and you realize that you know, the number one rule we always said was that, you know, fans don't want to come to a game and watch advertisements and commercials. You know, that's one of the main differences with, you know, watching a game at home and coming to the park. They want entertainment. Now everyone's different. You know, some are there strictly for the game. Some are there because they're celebrating events. Some are just there because they're curious, whatever that is. But anytime you wanted to connect with a fan at the ballpark, you wanted to do it in an entertaining and engaging way. And I think that really kind of molded my mindset of what, you know, social media could be, at least for what I thought the Giants' voice could be, and tried to kind of develop entertaining elements in the way you introduce players. You might be selling tickets, but I think most part, thinking about the younger Giants fan, and you had a very youthful demographic on, you know, Twitter and Instagram and social media. And this is a way they were kind of connecting and creating an emotional bond with the team. And, you know, our, you know, you might, you know, your dad or grandfather might have said, yeah, I remember listening to the radio and falling asleep, and that's how I connected with this team. And then I might have said, yeah, gosh, I watched TV and Kuk and Kipe were always the voice of the Giants. And now we have this new voice. It's social media. It's,
right.
It's Twitter. It's Instagram. It's the videos that you're posting. And this is the way a younger generation is kind of becoming fans and connecting with athletes. And so I think those basic fundamentals kind of helped shape what I felt the way we could develop a strategy in social media. So it definitely helped me, although at the time I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so let's dig into that social story, because I do find it completely fascinating. It's amazing how the sports industry has changed so exponentially from back in 1996. You know, roles in social media and analytics and esports and all these different things didn't even exist back then. Yeah. Like the internet wasn't even a factor. And yet now it's like the predominant way people communicate and engage with their team. When it feels like to me, and I might be totally wrong on this, but when social media first started being a thing that teams engaged, it seemed like they used it as a listening device, like a way to hear from the fans and interact with the fans. And it feels like in the last years, it's become a much more, I don't know, aggressive. Maybe it's an outbound messaging board more than it is a inboard, you know, like more like a less of a listening device and more of a promotional device. Is that what you're seeing, or are we still in a creative function for social media, and is it still growing in a direction you like and engage with?
Well, Brian, that's a really good observation. I think in the beginning it was much more manageable, and I think certain teams and certain brands still are utilizing, for example, Twitter as a communication tool, as a one-on-one tool, and listening to what an individual fan has to say for customer service, or just wants to vent, or wants to say, hey, you know, we love you, you're great. And I think certain teams still do that. But I think as we scaled up and, you know, it became more of a, maybe not a mass marketing, I see it more as a media distribution tool. And
okay.
Brands are more focused on creating content and creating media in a way that fans are consuming it. I mean, you know, the younger generation is you know, focused on getting highlights and getting content via YouTube and watching highlights, House of Highlights on Instagram, right? And they're seeing little clips. And,
yeah.
You know, I grew up watching SportsCenter, and that's how you kind of consumed a lot of, oh, wow, here's what happened, and here are those really cool highlights, and you watch bloopers and whatnot. Now it's done through social channels, and it's not just, oh, let's just take the best highlights. You know, highlights kind of are the baseline, and it's getting creative with content. And now we're seeing athletes creating their own content, whether it's video, whether it's, blogging and just developing their voice, or it's just interesting different things. And I think that's where I've seen it go. Now, where is it going? It's anyone's guess, but I think that's part of the uniqueness of this field, is that it keeps changing and evolving instantaneously. You know, and someone does something new and different, and it becomes a trend, and we kind of follow each other, and we're watching, and we're all kind of growing in this industry together. Now, I just happen to be at kind of maybe the early stages of it, and it was just kind of new and unique, and I think everyone was just dipping their feet in the water, and now you're seeing some really advanced and interesting technologies and techniques, and everyone, some say it's oversaturated, but others say it's like there's never been more information, there's never been more content at, you know, a fan's fingertips, and so that's really exciting for the fan, but it's also challenging for someone like me, because you're also trying to figure out, well, how do we connect now and what's next, and trying to manage all of that, on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it's crazy. I read a stat a while ago, or maybe more of just a statement, that was saying that people are reading more than ever, They're just not reading books and newspapers, right? They're reading social media content. They're reading online articles, you know, so they're still just as engaged as they used to be. They're just doing it in a completely different way. And that's got to be hard to keep up with and hit that market, because it just keeps changing. You know, what was exciting last year to an audience and new and fresh isn't now. Like, how do you continue that process of being continually creative?
It's a challenge. And I think, you know, you use things like data, you use things like your own personal, you know, focus groups. And I mean that by, you know, talking to friends, talking to people younger than you, looking at what your fans are consuming and watching trends through obviously your own. But yeah, it is interesting that I think as, you know, humans and individuals, we're always consuming content, whether that, and I saw this a long time ago, someone posted a picture of a commuter train in like the 50s or 60s, and everyone was reading a newspaper.
Right.
So it's, you know, very similar to like everyone on their phones now. Now the difference is on their phones, they might be watching a video, they might be scrolling through Facebook, they might be reading an audio, you know, their Kindle, something, but everyone's kind of consuming on their own. Now the difference is, I think that, you know, where we would have breaks, I feel like there is no break, that, you know, people are, you know, standing in line, they pull their phones out. They're sitting on a bus or a train, they pull their phones out. They're walking, they're reading their phone.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a lot of people read their phones while they're driving. and it's definitely something that, you know, it's just the consumption is just so much there that you, I don't know if there's a right answer to how you keep up. How do you stay creative is just trial and error. It's based on, okay, we're going to measure it using data. We're just going to, you know, see if we like it too. There's some, you know, gut instincts, there's an art and science to it, but at the same time, you know, different is kind of pushed in this space. You know, you got to be different. You got to be unique. Innovation and doing things different keeps you fresh as well. So I think you keep pushing yourselves, and there's always been this, but, you know, taking ideas from other areas. You see something that works somewhere, oh, can we try that? Can we do something in our vein? But a lot of the ideas are recycled, but in updated and done in different ways. But I think the key is that, you know, you continue to push. If you stay stale, or if you're just not, you know, engaging enough, you will obviously find that out through your own data and stats and just engagement rates. And you kind of have to keep up with where your fans are going and maybe where they don't know you should go. And you try to stay ahead of that.
You mentioned data a couple times in there. Most of the young people I speak with assume that working in social media means you have to be the fastest and the most creative content developer. But I think they're forgetting about that whole data and research and understanding what works kind of side of the process. If you were listing, or if you were talking to a group of students and saying, hey, these are the most important things you need to learn and do and be really knowledgeable in to be successful in sports media, how would you line that up for somebody?
No, that's a great question, Brian. I don't know the answer to it. And I think it just depends. But I mean, yeah, data is becoming, I think, more, especially in sports. And I think, you know, some teams have had a head start on others, but data seems to be driving business decisions a lot more. I think the key, though, is not to get so obsessed with the data that, you know, it prohibits you from, you know, doing anything, because you're afraid, oh, we can only post, you know, a certain time a day, or, you know, we're not getting the engagement we want on these posts, so we should continue to research as opposed to just, you know, following the emotion of it. And there's a balance with both. So if I'm talking to a young person, though, I'm telling them that, you know, to have a very good knowledge of kind of, you know, of social media in terms of where the data analytics and metrics fall in place. You don't have to necessarily be an expert, but, you know, the days when you say, hey, I know how to run a Twitter account, and here's my funny captions, and
right.
I can, you know, create some Photoshop. That is still needed, and I think content is always going to be king, but understanding kind of trends and how decisions are made and possibly, you know, an opportunity as well, I would say, because as teams and brands start to really, you know, look at return on investment, trying to find where their marketing dollars are going. And in some cases, it's not even marketing dollars, it's just dollars in general. And, you know, more teams are, you know, building out their social teams and it's not just a social media person. You have, I've heard terms like data scientists, you have digital graphics, you have video, you have people that are essentially building strategies within the organization. You have iPhoneographers. You have all kinds of specialized, but then you have people that kind of do everything. And understanding kind of where those trends are and how you fit in and where your strengths are, I think helps. I mean, I'm not an accounting major, but I think, you know, understanding how you know, the finances work helps you with a global mindset of an organization. And I think, you know, when you look at if you're interviewing for a job or if you're talking to someone, having, you know, general knowledge, you know, outside of your expertise really helps, because you have to understand how sponsorship works. You have to understand where ticket sales and community relations and PR, all those things fit into the social media world. And when you base your opinions based on what you're representing your brand on, and creating your voice and the share of content, you know, you have to balance it out. Having understanding of how all those work will help you immensely.
That's really great advice. I will say, baseball is different than any other sport. The grind is different. When I was the news director at Fox Sports Northwest, I used to feel for my baseball team because they were just on the road so often, and they're traveling constantly, and it's every night, and it's repeat, repeat, repeat. And they'd struggle sometimes to come up with creative story angles and different ways of telling the same, you know, game analysis or whatever. How much are you able to plan out and ahead of the season? And how much do you just have to kind of create fresh in the moment and be inspired or follow some thread and pull on it a little bit? What's your kind of process for sharing that social media story of the Giants?
Well, first of all, I think, yeah, what you're saying is we're a little off, those who work in baseball. There's something wrong with us, and we can't figure it out, but it's in our blood.
It's a dedication.
It is kind of a grind, and it's a lot easier. Like, winning solves all your problems, right? If you're
right
in the beginning of the season, everyone has, you know, excitement and hope for their team. So there's a lot of interesting storylines. You're excited. You always have like a Cinderella kind of team that, you know, isn't necessarily, you know, counted on to be there in the end, but they have a storyline that kind of develops on its own. And I think with social media, you do have a challenge of you don't want to fall into the prey of, and this happens a lot, and it's one of my biggest challenges, and I've failed many times. It's just you kind of go into autopilot of like, okay, we've got to get, it's not just the same storyline, but it's like you fall into the same practice of like, oh, we've got batting practice with the same players, and, you know, oh, the team just scored three runs, and you kind of fall into the trap of just kind of routine, and you don't want to do that. I think you try to plan things, and there are, fortunately for the Giants and for many other teams, there's outside of the game, there's things happening in the ballpark. There's promotions. There's someone that's there that might be of significance. There might be a pop culture reference that you're connected to. And I think that's where you get creative. You tell the story differently. And, you know, I think in the beginning we were really focused on being the news, you know, connection to the team and always giving scoring updates. And now there's so many places that fans can get that. It kind of forced us to think differently and said, okay, well, we're no longer the news, because we actually don't even break the news half the time. You know, news outlets do that, but we can be the emotion. You know, we have access to players, we have access to our ballpark, access to information that fans don't have yet. So it's our job to kind of come up with ways to tell those different stories, to connect with fans differently. And so I think you try that, and then the other side of that is the unexpected happens and you go off script, and those are, that's when it really, you know, a social media team or individual will really, you know, shine, because they recognize something and they connect with it. It's not forced, it's organic, or something happens, you know, in the game, or a player, so there's a storyline. And that's, I think, where baseball, you know, can really shine, is when you're doing things in that nature and following where the organic is going.
I love that you stress the access point there, because I always thought that was one of the great advantages that teams have, is that they're able to get a viewpoint that nobody else is able to see and to be able to share that. And I think that's the real winning point of social media, is that you get that insider viewpoint you never used to be able to get. And I think that's so powerful. And from being somebody on the news media side, the sports news media side, we never got that part of it. You know, we never got that access. And I always felt like that was the advantage teams have. And it's great to see that you appreciate that and understand that, is that, I mean, I think that's the stuff the fans want. They want to hear it from the players themselves, honestly, a lot of times too. Let's talk about that for a second. Players have taken their own brand. You know, they've really started to own it more than ever. How much of a role do you think the team should play, or does play, in helping kind of guide that as the players venture out into the murky waters of social media? Do you guys try to take a role in that and steer or help, or do you just let them be them?
A little bit of both. And, you know, it is interesting. And I think, you know, baseball, maybe is the one sport that hasn't been, you know, seen, if you look at the numbers, you know, basketball, NBA, almost every player is on social media of every team, and football as well, hockey. Baseball is that one where it's taken a while, and now you're seeing, you know, each generation of player that comes up has been, you know, basically growing up with social media. So in the beginning, it was kind of teaching some of, you know, the players how to use it, and here's how we can create a brand, and here's how, you know, you can, you know, utilize social media via Instagram and tell your story. And some players had trepidation, others jumped right in. Baseball's hard because there's just not a lot of downtime, and each player is individual. So I think the way we approach it, and many others do the same, is you want to encourage that player to be as authentic as possible. Now, that comes easy for some players. Others, it's more of, hey, I want to be protective of my privacy and my family, so I only want to share certain things. But I think what we're seeing now is that, you know, players have a platform. We try to, you know, guide them as much as they want to be guided, but in no way are we telling them what to say or how to say it. So I think in certain ways we're consultants when we need to be. But, you know, the same way that we are, you know, putting them up on the scoreboard or doing YouTube videos, you know, we write scripts in those scenarios and create content ideas. We pitch those things to them. And if we think we know the player, we want to develop a certain side of them. Some have, you know, real outgoing personality. Others are more quiet. When you do a commercial, you kind of want to bring the best out of that player and utilize what they're personality traits are. I think it's the same in social media. So you don't want to push them if they're not comfortable sharing. And you definitely want to take advantage of someone who is open and wants to share. And it's just, I think it's an individual by individual case, but I think it'd be looking at it as a whole, you know, players are understanding that they have that platform. And I think it works best if, you know, they're active on their social channels and you help them on, you know, the team social, and you kind of have this connection. It's not easy to do all the time, but I think we've seen the most success with players who embrace, you know, the social media teams, but also their individuality. And you kind of jump, you know, on those opportunities when they happen. And again, a lot of it's not planned, but it's more of just teaching and learning along the way on, you know, the do's and don'ts and how this can be an asset to you individually and how it can benefit the team, and you learn from each other as well.
Every team and athlete and brand across sports has their own social media profile, but then they also have their own voice. Like, they have a different style. I mean, there's some teams that are funny, you know, that really go out of their way to try to be cute and funny and have that approach. You have other teams that tend to have a more serious angle or whatever. They all have different ways of going about it. How did you establish, or what was your kind of thought process in establishing the voice of the Giants, and how did that process come about?
Well, it's funny you say that. I mean, I think, you know, we definitely weren't the first to do it. And when I started, it was 2010. And, you know, Matt Chisholm, who's our director of public relations and media relations, you know, he started the Twitter channel before anyone had even really known what it was. And it was used as kind of an information. Here are the lineups, here's the scores.
Right.
Which was way ahead of its time. And then we started, when I started, it was like, okay, well, we're growing. The team is starting to win a little bit. It was just really talking as a fan. And it was just modeled after a few other brands. I mean, at the time, like Whole Foods, I remember, and I think Southwest Airlines, you know, and then there were a few teams that we're talking to, and just kind of talking as a fan. And I love the analogy of, you know, like for us, we have Mike Kuechel and Dwayne Kuiper. They kind of are the face and voice of the Giants. You know, if you're a Dodger fan, you had Vin Scully. So you had these voices and brands, and people would hear them, and they just felt like, yeah, that feels like our, you know, like the Giants. It's Giant season. They become part of your family. So in a way, you're talking to, you know, a fan in a different way, but you kind of want to match what that brand was. And there is some humor in there. There's some history in there, but this is also new and different and young. So, you know, I think in the beginning, no one really, the mass media, you make one grammar error and it's just everywhere, right? They call you out. You're put on blast. Back then, I think, you know, I probably tweeted a lot of stuff that, you know, you weren't sure if it was going to work or not. And, you know, maybe you, at this point it was called, now it's called trolling. Back then it was roasting. So you just try different things, but you were a fan and you're just having fun as, you know, talking as the voice of a team. And you wanted to kind of have this conversation with your fans and you wanted to feel the emotion, of the game. So, you know, funny works really well, but funny is hard because you can't fake it. You got to have a really smart and funny person. And I think that you can't force it either. And moments have to work and you try things. So I think it was a lot of trial and error. Twitter just gives you that opportunity to kind of be creative. And at the time it was the more creative and out of, you know, the box, the more successful you were, because there were still a lot of, you know, RSS feeds and there were still, you know, people just tweeting, just information and links, which I think we did as well. But I think we also saw when you talked to someone and you answered questions and you wished them happy birthday and you came up with funny puns about, you know, what was going on in the field and references to pop culture. Those were the things that resonated. And again, I go back to what that, you know, those lessons of, you know, running entertainment. And I think, again, when you can make the crowd, you know, cheer and laugh and you know, go, ah, oh, those cute moments, that's what you're essentially doing in social media, just in a different way, and and it happens in an instant, and it's kind of over in an instant. So overall, I think, you know, we all kind of learned this together, and in no way did I, you know, invent anything. I wish I, you know, did. I wish I could trademark something, but you're just learning along with everyone else, and I think it was just being at the beginning, it was really exciting to try that. And I think that kind of led to where we are now, whether it's 2.0 or 3.0 of, you know, using GIFs and obviously there's, you know, viral memes that go around. And I remember, you know, gosh, the, you know, the Harlem Shake comes and everyone tried to do a video with their, you know, with their team or players. I mean, things like happen and it just helps humanize and it's just fun. I mean, sports is supposed to be fun. We're in the entertainment business as some of my colleagues say, you know, we're in the fun business and that's what we're trying to do is just have fun. And the more fun you have, the more fun your fans have,
and they connect and they have that, you know, positive engagement. And I think if you're a young person, you look for ways that you can add to that as a, you know, if you want to work in marketing or social media.
I love this. And I love your perspective on this. I feel like I could continue asking you questions all day, but I know that you have a busy schedule ahead of you. So we'll finish up with this. You, in your years there, have hired a lot of staff. You've had a lot of people work underneath you. How important is something like trust in the world of social media? Because if you ask me, it would keep me up at night knowing that somebody else had the keys to the car and could be tweeting out something or posting something that could be damaging to our brand. So how important is for you to feel like you establish a trust with your team and know that they're reliable?
Well, I mean, trust in any relationship, if you, you know, read any self-help book or talk to anyone, trust is the most important thing. And communication builds trust, obviously. Understanding what that brand is. And again, I think we're rewriting the rules in social media because, you know, it depends on who you talk to in your organization. They might want you to stay on brand and never make the headlines. Whereas a younger person might say, gosh, we got to push the envelope, you know, and it's all about getting eyeballs. It's somewhere in the middle, but you know, you obviously hear about the missteps and the mistakes and, you know, fire the intern tweets when someone, you know, does something that goes too far or makes a major mistake. And those are the things you try to avoid. But at the same time, you're always asking to push the envelope, to have fun. And I think that comes with practice, that comes with experience. And yeah, I think the trust comes from someone that you just trust in general, that they have the team's and the brand's best interest at heart, not so much their own. And what I mean by that is, some, you know, if you have someone who's just trying to make a name for himself or doesn't understand the bigger, you know, ramifications of what could happen, then, you know, that could raise a red flag. But at the same time, you want someone, it depends on what you're looking for in your social, what your strategy is, what your brand is. But it is a delicate balance. But yeah, I think speed is really our currency. And so you don't have time to check things all the time. And sometimes a tweet goes out quickly or a photo goes out that isn't planned. And that trust has to be there if you're giving someone the keys, as you say, to that. But I think for the most part, all of us have stories where we've lost a little sleep, and everyone makes mistakes. And I think that, you know, if you have a person who truly feels, you know, you have trust in them, they're probably going to lose the most sleep over any kind of mistake. And I think that, you know, in itself, it's the other way, is where you have to provide support and say, we all make mistakes. And this is a, you know, part of the business where, you know, if you don't make a mistake, then you're probably not trying hard enough, or it's okay, because everything, it happens in real time. And it's definitely a challenge, you know, day in and day out. So the trust goes both ways. They have to trust you and you have to trust them. But definitely, we're looking for high character individuals. We're looking for people who think, you know, differently than others and want to solve problems, and someone who's just fun. And I think those are some of the key attributes, if you had to just summarize it in 30 seconds, Brian.
I love that. And I tell you, one of the things that really stood out to me in this conversation is that you created an environment that sounds like you allow your people to try things. And I think as a creative person myself and a content creator, that's one of the most important things you can feel, is that empowered to try things and not be afraid to fail and to kind of stick your neck out there a little bit, as long as it's not like, I don't know, a problem, like a really, you're going too far, but to be able to try new techniques and try new technologies or try whatever comes up. And I think that's so empowering. And I have to say, I think you'd be a pretty good guy to work for.
I hope so. I you know what? I get excited when someone gets me excited, because I feel like I'm a creative person, but I also want to, you know, they always say hire someone that's smarter than you. Well, I try to hire someone that's not just smarter than me, but more creative than me, because if it can get me excited and help me get creative, that's even more exciting. So yeah, I love bringing, you know, people around me. I want to be a part of that process. I want to, you know, take part in it. So if I feel like, gosh, this person's really, you know, bringing a unique or a different kind of energy, and I like to just say, here's what the goal is. We got to achieve it. You try not to be, you know, a quote micromanager and tell them how to do it. And I think that's where the creativity comes, is you want someone to say, well, here's how I would go about it. And that's when I think people really shine, is when they bring their own authenticity into a process, and you can, you know, go off of there. So that's really, I think, what I look for and what I've learned from. And I want to learn as well. I think, you know, learning as a manager, you can learn so much from the people that work from you. So it's important to kind of keep that perspective in line as well.
I love it, Brian. This is such a great conversation. I've enjoyed every second of it. Thank you so much for carving out some time. I know you're on the brink of a very long baseball season. So good luck to you and the Giants, and enjoy the rest of spring training.
Hey, Brian, I really, you know, appreciate it. And what you're doing is great. I love podcasts. I've listened to yours before. I've listened to a few people I know and don't know. So congrats to you. And I think that the people listening here are all doing themselves a great service by, you know, trying to learn from people like me. I don't know if I have anything to add, but
you do.
You know, if anyone, then it's great. Then it makes me happy, because there's a lot of people who have helped me get to this point, and even more that have helped me now, you know, just get through day by day. And I love learning from others. And if I can teach and talk to others, it's that much more rewarding.
Well, I'll tell you what my favorite moment is. At the end of almost every interview, the person I'm interviewing says to me, man, I wish there was something like this when I was coming up in the industry. And it always makes me feel proud that we're doing this and we're helping all the people out there that are trying to get their foot in the door of the sports industry, because that's what they want. And that's what I've had all my career, right. And I've loved every minute of it. And I still get geeked up about it. And clearly you do, because you brought the energy today, and I can tell that you're excited by everything you do. And I think that transcends. I think that teaches everybody out there that there's a lot of fun to be had, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's why we're still doing what we're doing. You know,
exactly.
I often say I need a real job one day, and it's not a real job, but it's fun and exciting. And there's a lot of people who want to work here. You know, you try to talk them out of it with all the, yeah, there's some long hours and you got to put this in and that in and blah, blah, blah. And they still, you know, get excited, and that's cool. So it's a fun industry. And I think the best part about the industry is meeting people, you know, like you that are in it, and you just kind of share ideas and connect and keep growing that way.
Massive thanks to Brian Srabian on the eve of the NCAA tournament. Baseball's also just around the corner, so Brian's headed into a really long season, so I appreciate him giving us the time. But remember, if you listen closely, you'll realize that he loves it. And I know if you are listening to this podcast, you love sports. So the grind of a long season isn't really a struggle. It's not really even a grind. It's a dream come true in so many ways. Thanks for listening, everyone. Tune in Thursday night for our Facebook Live session from the Work in Sports Facebook page, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, live from the Work in Sports Facebook page. I will hopefully see you all there. Now, it's time to get back to work.